Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We've got two new sponsors to welcome today, Wegner CPAs and Aplos Software. Welcome, Wegner. Welcome, Aplos. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd get slapped with a diagnosis of kylectasia if you tried to milk me with the idea that you missed today's show. Fiscal what? Fiscal sponsorship. You've probably seen it and don't know what it's called. We'll fix that as we cover what it is, who does it, how it can help your work, getting started, and what can go wrong. Gene Takagi is our legal contributor and principal of NEO, Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group. And Andrew Schulman is with Schulman Consulting. They're both with me for the hour. On Tony's Take Two, sponsor love. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. Pursuant.com, and by Wegner CPAs. Welcome, Wegner. Guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. You're not a business, you're a nonprofit. Aplos Accounting Software, designed for nonprofits. Welcome, Aplos. They're at nonprofitwizard.com. And by Weebee Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers, WeebeeSpelling.com. What a terrific pleasure to welcome back Gene Takagi. You know him? You know him for Pete's sake, but he deserves a proper introduction, of course. He's the managing editor, managing attorney of NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco, and he edits the popular, wildly popular, you should be following this blog, nonprofitlawblog.com, highly recommended by Nonprofit Radio. And he's the American Bar Association's 2016 Outstanding Nonprofit Lawyer. He's at GTAC on Twitter. Welcome back, Gene.
Hi, Tony. It's great to be back.
Pleasure. And we're joined by Andrew Schulman. He runs the only consulting practice in America focused on fiscal sponsorship, Schulman Consulting, assisting both sponsor organizations and fiscally sponsored projects. He's an active member of the National Network of Fiscal Sponsors and a pro bono consultant for the Taproot Foundation. His company is at SchulmanConsulting.com, and he's at AM Schulman. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Tony. Good to be here.
Pleasure. I'm glad you're both with me. Thank you for the hour. We got a big topic, this fiscal what? This fiscal sponsorship. Gene, let's start with you. What are we talking about? Fiscal sponsorship.
Well, it is a little bit of a complicated topic, Tony.
Well, we have an hour together.
Which is great. So fiscal sponsorship can mean a lot of things. And so when people, you know, use the term fiscal sponsorship, many of them are thinking of it as a kind of using another organization to raise money so that they can get a charitable project off the ground without forming a new nonprofit. But it also refers to other types of relationships as well. But it generally refers to the ability of a charitable project to get the benefit of a 501c3 and raising money through a 501c3 through a relationship of the project leaders with the 501c3 fiscal sponsor.
Now, you are approached by a lot of well-intentioned, zealous people who want to start nonprofits. And you just mentioned this can be an alternative to that. Have you guided people in this direction and has it been successful?
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. So it works as a great incubator for charitable ideas that organizers may not be sure of, you know, will get off the ground or not, but they'd like to give it a try. Or it might be for a limited scope. It might be for, you know, one event a year, or we're going to just do it for 1 year and see what happens. It's great to have another charity out there who's saying, you know, we'll sponsor you and we'll sort of recognize this as an internal project of ours and you can work with us to do it. And if it works, maybe you spin off later and you form your own nonprofit. So it works as a great incubator. And I often advise smaller organizations that don't have a lot of administrative expertise to think about fiscal sponsorship.
And Gene, have you also worked in your practice with the sponsor organizations?
Yeah, with several sponsors throughout the country, Tony. There are ways to do it right and there's ways to do it wrong. So hopefully we get a chance to look into those things a little bit more.
Okay, sounds good. Andrew, let's bring you in. I know your practice is both on the sponsoring side and also the the sponsory project side. Anything you want to add at the outset as we try to break this down for people?
I would just echo what Jean said about, you know, fiscal sponsorship means a lot of different things. And, you know, it's the most interesting thing that I've run into is that everyone has, you know, a little bit of personal experience. I say they're looking at fiscal sponsorship through a keyhole. And if you sort of pull back, there's actually a whole landscape of different things that it means and different ways it can work. So that's what gets me really excited about it.
Okay. And I guess validation for the two of you being expert in this area. Someone emailed me, someone who works in fiscal sponsorship, and said that both Gene and Andrew are experts. And then, of course, now we're on Facebook Live. Live listeners, if you want to follow us, watch the video, Facebook Live, go to the Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio page, Facebook. And Reed Stockman, hello, Reed. Reed says, Gene is an awesome expert. Thanks for the topic. Absolutely, Reed, you're in the right place. Reed, you should be here every Friday, 1 to 2 Eastern. This should be your staple, Friday, 1 o'clock. But I'm glad you're with us today, Reed. And also, Vanessa Jones is on Facebook Live. Hello, Vanessa. Hello. Okay, so yes, you both said lots of ways to do this. And in fact, there are models A through F. So we've got six models. But the two of them are the most popular, A and C. I don't know why it's not A and B. Maybe we can bring that up with the national national network. Thank you, Andrew. National network of fiscal sponsors. But anyway, A and C are the most popular, so we're going to spend time there. But let's see, Andrew. Let's stick with you. I don't want to tick off six different models because we're not going to spend a lot of time on four of them. But just what are the distinction? Like what characteristics distinguish generally between the six models? What kind of different things do we see in the six different models? And then we'll have time to focus on A and C.
Okay. I won't go through all of them individually, but yeah. You know, the key differentiator is and this is something Gene will hopefully chime in on as well, is the legal relationship between the sponsor and the project.
Okay.
And so if you think of it on a spectrum, you know, A is at one end where the project is essentially, in the eyes of the law and the IRS, just a program of the sponsor. It's like if they decided to start up a new program, it would look the same way to the regulators. You know, down to C is one where the project is actually a separate legal entity and has its own legal standing, but just does not have a 501c3. And so it's using the sponsor for that. And so there's all in between there, there's all different relationships and different setups, but it's basically dependent on what that relationship looks like and sort of what level the project is at in terms of their situation of, you know, are they incorporated? Do they have any standing? Those types of things.
Okay. So there's different relationships between the two. Andrew, when we come back to you, I need you to speak up a little louder, okay? Try to write a little post-it note on your phone or something to speak a little louder, okay? So you remember through the hour. You're coming in quiet for everybody.
Now I did find,
you know, contrary to popular belief, I actually researched these conversations before I have them. And at fiscalsponsorship.com, there's an article by someone who I think is pretty well known in this area, Gregory Colvin. Am I right, gentlemen? He's written a book.
Yes.
Do I have that right? Yes. Okay. And he's got a chart. So if you go to fiscalsponsorship.com, in this paper by him, which is called Presentation on Fiscal Sponsorship, also aptly named. Good for him. There's a chart, and it has the A through F, and lays out different basic characteristics and whether it's a separate legal entity and where the charitable donations belong and things like that. So if you want to get more detail on the six, you certainly can consult Gene Takagi or Andrew Shulman. But if you want to see a simple chart, then you could go to fiscalsponsorship.com. Okay, Gene, let's start to break these down. Model A. I guess we just have like a minute or so before a break. So why don't you just give an overview of of what a Model A looks like, Gene.
Sure. So it's actually exactly what Andrew had said. It really is an internal program or unit of the fiscal sponsor. And what happens is the project leaders, the people who come up with the idea that they want this project sponsored, go up to the fiscal sponsor and say, hey, can you develop an internal program within your entity, within your charity, but delegate management of it to us? And the one thing that separates it from just being a plain vanilla internal program is that there's a fiscal sponsorship agreement that allows the program organizers or the project organizers to spin it off if at any time they decide that the fiscal sponsorship relationship isn't right, or they decided that they're finished with the incubation and they want to set up their own nonprofit 501c3 entity and then move the program over into that new entity. So that's basically Model A in a nutshell.
Okay, cool. Well done. And we're going to dive in further on that and talk about the pitfalls, contracts. Gentlemen, what I do want to do is I want to approach this from the perspective of a potential sponsors, because we've got, you know, over 12,000 people working in and around small and mid-sized nonprofits. So they're all potential sponsors. So that I want to look at it from that perspective more than the perspective of the potential projects. Okay? So everybody stay with us. Fiscal sponsorships continue.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Got a bunch of people who joined us on Facebook Live. I love it. Rob Mager, Don Lechner, Karen Kachikian. I thought you were headed to the beach. Gary Ostro. Welcome. Welcome. Who's that? Kurt Hildebrand? I can't. Okay. Welcome, Facebook Live. Glad you're with us. Okay. So, your name is Gene, not Sam. Sorry. Nobody's name here starts with an S. So that was a big faux pas. Okay. Gene. Let's go a little further with Model A. Why? Let's again, from the sponsoring organization's perspective, why would a nonprofit want to take in an internal project from some bunch of ruffian startups, startup people with a lot of passion, but not any business sense? What's the advantage to that sponsor organization?
Well, hopefully they have a little bit of business sense.
Okay. Otherwise, you wouldn't take them. Yeah. All right. That's true. All right.
So the main reason why a fiscal sponsor, an existing charity, would say, hey, I'm willing to sponsor your project and actually make it an internal program of our entity, the main reason they should do that is it's because it furthers their own charitable mission. So that should be the number one reason. What okay. ends up happening sometimes by some maybe less informed leaders of some organizations that might be willing to fiscally sponsor a project is that they think that it might be a way to make some additional money. And they might say, hey, we can raise funds for this program, but, you know, bring in a little of that for our own general admin purposes. And hey, maybe that'll effectively give us more resources to do everything else that
okay.
we do as well.
Right. Because, Andrew, there's a fee associated with this, right? That the sponsoring organization charges the project.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's correct. Usually it's based either on the revenue that's raised, the percentage, or it's based on the expenses of that project.
Okay. And what's a typical range? What's fair?
Well, it depends on the model. It depends on a lot of different things, but I would say anywhere between 5% and 15%.
Okay.
Is in the range.
All right. But we're just right now. We're just talking about Model A. So is that, does that apply for Model A? 5% to 15%.
Yeah, in Model A, we're probably looking at more of 8, 9, 10 to 15.
Oh, okay, a little bit higher, right? Because the organization that sponsors is taking on a lot of responsibility, right? Let's start fleshing that out.
Yeah, exactly. They're taking on all of the legal responsibility, all of the risk in terms of liability for the project, as well as taking on the financial management of the donations that are coming in and the, how they're being spent, how that money's being spent. The employee risk if there's paid employees. So there's a lot of pieces to this for the sponsor.
Okay, and what's the board's obligation here before we take this on? I mean, it sounds like something we shouldn't do just for the revenue. Wait, let me just start with that question. We should not do it, and I think Gene was alluding to this. We shouldn't do it just for the money. Do I have that right?
Yes. I would say nobody should get into any part of nonprofits to make a lot of money.
Okay. All right. And of course, you know, even if it furthers your mission, but you know, if you're not really into the whole idea, but you just feel like you could, let's say it does meet the criteria that Gene mentioned, definitely furthers your charitable mission. Okay, got that. But then we can make some money at it. You know, we're like lukewarm on the relationship idea, but you know, we can make 9 or 10%. This is not the way to go about it, right?
Right. Yeah, it's it really also requires the sponsor to have their processes and infrastructure in place to do it well. I know we've talked about the book, The 6 Ways to Do It Right. And I know Gene's firm and on his blog, there's 6 Ways to Do It Wrong from a legal standpoint. In my world, from an operations standpoint, there's probably about 100 ways to do it wrong. And one of them is trying to take on a project as a sponsor when you don't have your own infrastructure set up well and your financial processes and all of that work is not sort of ready for prime time, then if you take on someone else's on top of that, you're just setting yourself up for a bad situation.
You alluded to the book. I didn't make the connection explicitly. The book is by Gary Colvin. Is that right?
Greg Colvin.
Greg, yeah. Colvin. Thank you. What is the exact title of his book?
Gene, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's Fiscal Sponsorship, 6 Ways to Do It Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, okay. And Greg Colvin is the guru on this topic, Tony. He's really led the whole movement and written really the seminal book and probably only full-size book on the matter. And if any nonprofit actually wants to start a fiscal sponsorship program or has started doing it kind of informally but not really gotten their ducks in order, they should buy this book and read it very carefully.
Okay. Greg Colvin, Fiscal Sponsorship, 6 Ways to Do It Right. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Gene, let's flesh out some of these legal responsibilities that a sponsoring organization is taking on under Model A. What does the board need to consider and be aware of?
So apart from the mission of the project, they want to make sure that they've got the right sort of project leadership in place. They obviously, you know, as Andrew was saying, you're taking on not only all of the responsibility, the legal responsibility of the project and the financial management responsibility of the project, but everything to do with the project is to do with your organization as well. So if there are any risks involved in that project, the liabilities are going to be the fiscal sponsors. You're not isolated from that. So you're taking on all that responsibility. So the board has got to think about, and sometimes they delegate this off to management if the project is well-defined enough to be able to do it. But I like it when boards actually approve the projects and take a look at the application, which might include bios of the project leaders, and any special risks that might be involved with their activities. So if they are working with children, you know, if they're going on outdoor expeditions or if they've got a camping program, is it going to be dealing with research or anything more than just sort of plain administration in an office? they've got to think about the risks and whether they have the right insurance in place and all of the infrastructure things that Andrew said they've got to get in order before they accept a project. Those are all the things that the board has to say, yes, we're prepared to take on this particular project because we've got all our ducks in order to be able to sort of handle the management and oversee all of the management of this particular project, its employees, its volunteers, and everything else.
All right. I'm getting a little tired now of talking in the abstract. I want to implore you to tell me a story. So Gene, do you have a client story you can tell about a Model A fiscal sponsorship that went well?
Sure. A typical Model A project may come in that says we've got this great idea. We're going to run an after school program for children's education in this area of a city that doesn't get much of those services. We're not sure, if it's going to work or not. We project that we're going to bring in about $100,000 a year. And we're not sure of funding outside of the first year. We've got some donors and foundations, perhaps, that say if we have a 501c3, they will commit. So we've got this first-year commitment of $100,000. We're not sure after that if it's going to work. So we're looking for a fiscal sponsorship relationship to start out with. And that might be kind of the first basis of saying, from the fiscal sponsor's point, well, have you done anything like this before? Have you raised funds before? Or, how did you get this initial $100,000 worth of commitment? And what risks are going to be involved in your after-school program? What exactly are you going to do? Who's going to manage it? Do you need employees? Or are you going to be all volunteer-run? Those are the types of questions that need to be asked of this particular project that we're talking about. And sometimes that particular project that I'm thinking of, ended up becoming a great project for that fiscal sponsor. The people that brought in the project were really focused on program and fundraising. They didn't want to worry about all the admins, about what filings to make. They didn't want to worry about payroll tax withholdings or insurance, developing all these governance policies, or even putting together a real board of directors. And they get all of that through the fiscal sponsor. So it works really well for the project and the program leaders. The fiscal sponsor gets this project because they're also interested in kind of children and youth programs in their area. They get this great project that gets a lot of attention, does very well, not only for the first year, but for subsequent years after that. And a great long-term relationship arises. And the project actually ends up staying with the fiscal sponsor, not just through an incubation period, but they never want to leave the fiscal sponsor.
Oh.
If you imagine, Tony, $100,000, if we're talking about even 10% in administrative fees, that's only $10,000 that the project would be paying to the fiscal sponsor
right. In
order to get all of those things, all of the insurance, the policies, the filings, no setup. That's a great relationship that can happen.
Okay. And it's continued, Gene? It's been successful staying with that sponsor organization?
For many years now.
All right. Excellent. Andrew, I'll give you a chance. When we get to Model C, I'll give you a chance to tell a story. Okay? Not to worry.
Okay. Great.
But still on Model A, and I want to remind listeners, I'm talking to Gene Takagi, principal of NEO, Nonprofit Exempt Organizations Law Group, and our legal contributor, and Andrew Shulman, principal at Shulman Consulting, shulmanconsulting.com, and we're talking about fiscal sponsorships. Right now, Model A, we'll get to the Model C, and we'll find out why B got skipped over. Andrew, what do you like to see? You mentioned there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Tick off some things that you like to see in a written agreement, and I'm presuming that there should be a written agreement. Everything I read said there ought to be a written agreement, but sometimes there isn't, or a lot of times there isn't. So let's just assume that nonprofit radio listeners are going to do it right. There is going to be a written agreement between the two entities. What do you like to see in that agreement?
Well, I like to see a lot of things. I mean,
okay.
You mentioned before one of the most important ones is how, clauses and sections that will tell how this relationship might end if and when it's ready to be ended by either party. So if the project isn't doing well and the project leaders decide, okay, we're going to close up shop, there should be parts of the contract that say, okay, when that happens, here's how we're going to do it.
Including the possibility of spinning off to a different supporting organization, right?
Right. So that's the other side. If it does well and they decide either we need to move to a different sponsor that maybe has more, provides more services or more services tailored to our specific needs, or we want to go out, we're at the point where we're big enough and we're stable enough where we can go and get our own 501c3, what are the rules and what are the processes to dictate that? So that should all be in the contract. I also like to put in, again, I'm not an attorney, Gene is, but I like to also put in the expectations of both the sponsor, that the project should have for the sponsor, and that the sponsor has for the project. So that gets into a little bit of process and, how long should we expect as a project that it's going to take the sponsor to cut a check when we need to, make a payment to a vendor or to review a contract before we do it? How, if we're applying for institutional grants from foundations, what's the role of the sponsor in that? Those kinds of things as well. So that's the kind of stuff that usually gets skipped over in a lot of cases. But I've found that to be successful as a sponsor, you really have to set the expectations up front of both how you're going to operate with the project and what you expect from them.
Gene, what do you want to add on the contract side?
So just clarity about that the project and all of the funds raised for the project are really funds raised for the fiscal sponsor. The party that signs the contract with the fiscal sponsor, so the project leader, they're not registered to engage in fundraising themselves, and they don't have 501c3 status outside mm-hmm. of the fiscal sponsor. So they just have to realize that when they're fundraising as agents of the 501c3 fiscal sponsor, and they're raising funds for an internal project of that sponsor. So it could be restricted funds that they're raising, but it's not funds for their separate entity or anything like that. So when they spin off, they might form a separate entity, but ultimately, all of the funds belong to the sponsor. So there should be that legal understanding, and the contract has got to recognize that, because if you run into an issue with the IRS or an attorney general or other regulator, the documentation has got to be perfect, even though ultimately the sponsor should be willing to transfer out the assets if you've got a suitable successor that's willing to take on the project, including if the project leaders create their own 501c3 entity. Now, there are going to be little caveats to be careful about. So
right, here we go.
What
now.
If the reason why the termination is because the project leaders have failed miserably and even embezzled money from the organization? Well, then you don't want to transfer assets out to something that they created. That would be imprudent for the fiscal sponsors board. So little caveats like that you got to be careful about. And when they draft an agreement, you want to make sure that the sponsor is protected and doing it in the right way.
Okay, we are going to hold on there. Just got to close that Model A conversation. When we come back, we'll do the Model C. We'll move to that. See what the differences are. See what it means legally. And I have to do, in the meantime, do a little business. First, beginning with Pursuant. They've got a new free content paper for you, and that is the Intelligent Fundraising Health Check. Oh, healthcare is in the news. This is a fundraising health check. Evaluate the state of your fundraising. It includes 9 key performance indicators. I think those are KPIs, if you want to be jargony, but we're not here. 9 key performance indicators and 10 characteristics of organizations that thrive. Where do you go? You go to tony.ma/pursuant. tony.ma/pursuant. Check out free resources from our sponsors, Pursuant. Wegner CPAs. Welcome again. Welcome, Wegner. Welcome to Nonprofit Radio. They are a CPA firm based in Madison, Wisconsin, and true to their tagline, they do go way beyond the numbers. They are also very generous with tons of free resources. They've got a page that has dozens of policy statements for you, including all the policies you need to make your Form 990 complete, like committee meetings, disclosures on fraud, document retention, lots of others. And you'll be hearing me talk about these from week to week. You got to check these resources out too. You know, different, but valuable, absolutely, from Wegner CPAs. They're at Wegner CPAs. Don't forget the little S at the end. .com, WegnerCPAs.com. You click resources, then guides. Stop wasting your time using business accounting software for your books. You aren't a business. You are a nonprofit. You've heard rumors to that effect. Welcome, Aplos Software, our second new sponsor this week. Aplos. Aplos Accounting is the product, and it is designed for nonprofits. Don't use the business software for your nonprofit. You are one. Use one that was built from the ground up for nonprofits. Financial management, simple, affordable. It's called Aplos Accounting. It includes fund accounting, advanced reporting, donation tracking, everything you need in one simple software. And you want to check out Aplos Software? You want to see what Aplos Accounting is about? You go to nonprofitwizard.com. That is our sponsors. Those are our sponsors. Welcome new sponsors. I'm very grateful for that. And now it's time for Tony's Take Two. And I am imploring you to show love to our sponsors, our listeners, whether you're live, podcast, or affiliate. I'm so grateful. That was a sigh of gratitude that everybody's with us. I need you to check out the sponsors. It's important. We need them to stay with us so that we can continue to attract great guests. I can continue to take the show on the road to conferences. We get outstanding speakers there from the conference speakers. I need you to support our sponsors. And there are new ones coming October 1st. So you may hear me mention this again. But for now, Pursuant, Wegner CPAs, Aplos Accounting, and Weeby Spelling, I need you to check out all our sponsors. If you think they can help you, please let them. Check them out. Thank you very much. That is Tony's Take Two. And I am with Gene Takagi and Andrew Shulman. We're talking about fiscal sponsorship. Gentlemen, I think we're ready to move to Model C, unless somebody has something burning that the lackluster host did not cover in Model A. So anybody have to say something about Model A? Okay. Going, gone. Nope. Thank you. Let's move to Model C. And give it to Andrew. What distinguishes Model C from Model A?
Sure. Model C is more of an arm's length relationship. And it's usually just based around a specific activity or even a specific grant from the project that the project is soliciting through the sponsor's tax ID number. So basically, in this case, the project is not a division or a unit of the sponsor, but they have their own legal status. They're usually registered within their state as a charitable organization, but they don't yet have a 501c3 or don't have a 501c3. And so the main distinguisher here is that instead of handing off all of that administrative work to the sponsor with Model A, Model C, a lot more of that falls on the project, but they're really just utilizing that 501c3 status of the sponsor to take in tax-deductible donations.
So is this just temporary until the project gets its 501c3? Designation from the IRS?
It can be. It can be temporary. It can be longer term. It can be, you know, there's a lot of uses. I know we haven't gotten to story time yet, but there's a lot of uses for Model C in the arts, where if you can imagine a documentary filmmaker is doing a film that has a charitable purpose, is telling an important story, and they want to raise money via donations that will be tax deductible from the donors. And so instead of going through the process of getting their own 501c3, they can actually go through a fiscal sponsor as a Model C and do it that way.
Okay. And reminder, I should have mentioned it earlier. Andrew, remember to speak louder, okay? Write yourself a note and then look at the note too. You got to look at the note after you write it. Gene, Model C, what do you want to add?
So I'll just build on what Andrew had just said. A lot of times this is a project that's sought by arts groups, sometimes by research groups, and they may not actually be formed as a nonprofit. They might just be individual sole proprietors in the case of artists, or they might be just a for-profit type of LLC or business corporation, but engaged in some sort of charitable effort. So the general idea here is they want to raise some monies, and they've got some willing funders to either donate or make grants to this specific project. But the funders and the donors want to get a tax deduction for making the grant, but they can't make a grant to like an individual artist and just take a deduction for that, right? And the foundation may not be able to make a grant to an individual artist without jumping through more hoops that they have to do under the regulations when they give to non-charities. So both of them would rather give to a charity, but to fund what the artist may be doing. And in that case, they give it to the fiscal sponsor, and the fiscal sponsor has the ultimate legal control and discretion over what they're going to do with the money, subject to the restrictions that the donors put. So the donors are not going to say, you have to give it to this individual artist. What the donors are going to say is, we want to produce or we want to fund the production of a documentary on penguins in Argentina. And there's only one, you know, filmmaker that's actually doing that, and they've made the, you know, fiscal sponsorship contract with the fiscal sponsor. And what the Model C agreement is a pre-approved grant relationship. So basically, the fiscal sponsor is saying, yes, we've already vetted this project, this artist, and we know that they're doing the research, and they're competent, and we trust them to be able to use our grant monies properly. So if we raise the money to fund this project, we're going to re-grant it to this person, and this person is going to deliver the project for us, and then we're going to make sure that it gets public distribution and isn't completely just with the person only. It is reasonable. That's the typical Model C.
Okay, so there's more vetting involved. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's going to be quite a bit of vetting in advance just to make sure that this person isn't just pay themselves, you know, for their own living and, you know, housing expenses, but not do anything charitable with the money or build a piece of art that they sell to a private collector so it never gets into the public realm. And it's just a way for that person to make extra income. And their parents donated the money and took a tax deduction for that. That would be completely improper and unlawful. So the fiscal sponsor's got to make sure to vet that, hey, if we're going to enter into this relationship, our role is a grant maker, just like a private foundation might, you know, have a role to vet all of their grantees. But when you're not going to give a grant to another public charity, the, you know, the responsibilities and the vetting has got to be a little bit stronger, because you have to make sure that your money that you're giving, your charitable monies that you're giving as a fiscal sponsor, are only going to be used for charitable purposes, and they're not going to be misused for private benefit.
Yeah. Gene, do we know why Model B got skipped over? Why did B get screwed?
Well, I'll take first shot at it. B is around and is probably the third most common of the fiscal sponsorship forms. And it's a little bit of Model A and C combined, in that the project is owned by the fiscal sponsor. But rather than, as in Model A, where all the employees, volunteers, and the contractors all are employed or hired or contracted by the fiscal sponsor, the entire project is going to be contracted out to a single independent contractor in a Model B. So you own the project because you want to control the project results, but you hire an independent contractor who would probably be the project leaders that brought the project to you in the first place. And they're not going to be your employees, but they're going to be independent contractors to it. And they're going to supply all the services that are the program services. The fiscal sponsor will still do most of the back office stuff.
So is it too late?
Their insurance would cover it, but they would hire out an independent contractor.
Can't we move C up to B and B down to C since C is more popular than B? Or is it it's too late for this or what? Who created this?
I don't know what Greg's nomenclature
was. Greg.
C is definitely more popular than B. But B, if you look at it in terms of control and responsibility of the fiscal sponsor, A is the most responsibility for the fiscal sponsor. B is the next most, and C is the least.
All right, so we're working down, as Andrew was saying earlier, it's the relation. What distinguishes these six is the relationship, and we're working toward less responsibility for the sponsor. Is that A through F? Do I have that right?
At least A through C.
The others are slightly
different variations.
All right. Maybe we need to get Greg on here to explain his nomenclature. But he's the one who created this morass. Okay.
We have a bit of a naming problem in the sponsorship, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, Model A. Okay. Model A, Model B. Okay. Andrew, tell us a Model C story.
Sure. So
remember to talk loudly.
I'm trying. Tell me if I'm not, because I'm trying to, but tell me if I need to talk even more loudly, okay?
Okay. You sound
so,
okay. Go ahead.
I worked with an organization that is an association for nonprofit news organizations. And part of what they do is offer fiscal sponsorship to startup nonprofit news entities. So think like the local websites that have sort of blossomed all over the country when all the investigative reporters have gotten laid off from newsrooms. They've all gone out and started their own websites to cover local government and things like that. And they offer fiscal sponsorship in Model C to those entities to help them get started because sometimes to stay for very long periods of time. Because, again, these are folks who are starting these entities that aren't looking to manage, a nonprofit. They're not looking to worry about getting their 501c3 status and all of that. And this organization vets those folks. Obviously, they know who they are. They're watching them very closely. And so they're acting as the 501c3 for all of those organizations.
Okay. And that is that relationship continuing?
Yeah, they have a great program. They have probably upwards of 20 or so. And like Gene said, sometimes it makes sense for successful sponsored projects in either model to separate out on their own, and sometimes it makes sense for them to stay because if you're at a certain level of size and fundraising and staff and all that kind of stuff, it's just a really good deal for you to be sponsored. And so, especially in this day and age where a lot of funders are concerned about overhead and have lots of questions about overhead, I always tell people, you'll never have lower overhead than when you're under fiscal sponsorship.
We're going to go out for our last break. When we come back, of course, live listener love, that we got to do that. And we'll explore a little more the due diligence and, potential risks in our last 7 minutes or so. Stay with us.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like nonprofit radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Hi, this is Claire Meyerhoff from the Plan Giving Agency. If you have big dreams but a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
It's time for the live listener, love. The shout outs are going to Tampa, Florida, Woodbridge, New Jersey, Anaheim, California, Garwood, New Jersey. I don't know. I was from, I know Garfield, but no, this is Garwood. Not to slight you, Garwood. Live listener love to the live listeners. Germany, we've got a couple in Germany, Guten Tag, and also Sao Paulo, Brazil. I hate when Americans call it San Paulo. Don't do that. It's Sao. Sao Paulo, Brazil. Obrigado. And let's do a little Facebook live love, too. Pav Jackie, who I know as Jackie Pavarisi, Mike Zeller, George Harris, Rusty Constein. Rusty, hello. It's been a long time. Hello. Jack Palazzo, been a long time. Good to see you. And Judy Gittenstein, hello. Facebook Live. You can join us Facebook Live at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio page. And, of course, on the heels of all that has to come the podcast pleasantries. To our over 12,000 podcast listeners, thank you. Whenever you're listening, binge listening, maybe four episodes in a row, thank you. So glad you are with us. So glad you get value from the podcast and our affiliate affections to the many listeners at our AM and FM stations throughout the country. I'm grateful to you for tuning in on the on your analog device. Well, of course, maybe you stream your radio station. So not necessarily. However you're listening to your station, so glad you're with us. And I thank your station for carrying nonprofit radio. Expanding the network, expanding the family. It's a family, not a network. Network sounds like a healthcare organization. It's a family. Andrew, who's that? Who's that snickering? Is that you, Andrew? No. Gene is used to hearing this, so it's probably Andrew because Gene is used to hearing all this ranting. he listens patiently. So, love Gene. Okay, let's talk a little about some due diligence. Gene, I gave you a shot earlier. Let's talk to you now about. Let's hear from you. Sorry. Oh, my voice just cracked like I'm a 14-year-old. And some more of the due diligence that a sponsoring organization needs to do. You know, detail. We like actionable details for listeners.
Sure. Well, I think, especially if you're either model. Or
yeah,
any of the models,
either model. Right.
If you're looking to take on a sponsored project, you know, this is a relationship, this is a marriage, essentially, that you're getting into. So if you start with that premise, you think about, in a business sense, all of the things that you want to make sure you know about the folks that you're, metaphorically getting into bed with. So you obviously want to know about their experience. You want to know about their support networks, whether it's to be able to raise money or, bring on more people to help as their project evolves. You want to know, if they've had any criminal activity or anything like that, for sure. You want to find out about their plan. So do they have a business plan or a program plan? Do they have a fundraising plan? Is there any money committed at this point already? Like you guys mentioned before, that's sort of ready to go if they're able to get this status. Those are the kinds of things that you really want to dig into and understand. And, it, you know, a good fiscal sponsor will have a pretty well-defined application process that, you know, may have multiple rounds of interviews with the, you know, the staff of the sponsor, the board of the sponsor in some cases. You know, like Gene said, you do want ideally the board to make this decision or help you make this decision to take on these projects or even to start a sponsorship program. Because they are, at the end of the day, the ones who's, you know, they're on the line at the end of the day. They're fiduciarily responsible for the whole thing. So, you know, it should be, they should at least have some input into that.
Where do you see the responsibility for this due diligence residing? Like, who does it? Who within the organization is doing it?
Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, it's usually the staff. You know, whoever will be involved in working with the project from the staff of the sponsor would take the lead, maybe with some help from some key board members.
Okay. Gene, did you have something more about due diligence?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that it really is critical that the fiscal sponsor understand, particularly in the Model C situation, that they're the ones fundraising for the project, even though the project is housed in a different legal entity than that they're going to make grants to. They're responsible for all the monies and all the responsibilities associated with the donors or the foundations, including giving grant reports back to the foundations. And if it's government funded, the audit requirements that go along with that. And that's where you get the hefty, like the 15% fiscal sponsorship administrative fees that Andrew was talking about. Government audits are incredibly difficult to do and expensive. But the fiscal sponsor's got to be prepared to do all of that. They've got to make sure they've got adequate staffing to be able to handle all of these and treat all of these as restricted funds and have all of the infrastructure, all of the right policies, all of the right agreements, all of the right qualifications to do business if they're in different states and registrations, as you know, Tony. They've got to be prepared to do all of that, and that may depend upon each project that they get. They may be incurring additional responsibilities that they're going to have to think about.
And what if they don't do it right, Gene? What are some of the potential penalties?
Well, the worst thing that happens is, of course, the project gets into huge trouble, they engage in some sort of political activities, and all of a sudden you've jeopardized your own 501c3 status, or a child has been hurt because of the negligence that they've got that they've exhibited. And you don't have enough adequate separation in a Model C, or it's a Model A, and it's the internal project of your fiscal sponsor, so you're completely responsible for the liability. And you may find that you don't have enough insurance because you weren't anticipating those things in advance if you weren't really prepared for it. So those are the two worst-case scenarios.
Andrew, it sounds like you really should have some outside help and expertise if you're going to take this on.
Well, I would recommend it. I mean, I think you especially if you're doing it for the first time, or a lot of people have come to me, or I'm sure to Gene, when they've already got a couple of projects underneath them. I say a lot of people get into this accidentally, or at least unintentionally. And, you know, like we said, there's six ways to do it right. There's a lot of ways to do it wrong in the operation side of things. And, you know, it can very quickly go from a really good thing to not so good thing if your whole team is now focusing all their attention on these projects and it's sort of eating up all of their bandwidth. And so, you know, having some of those processes, procedures in place and getting all those things set up is really important.
Again, going back to the due diligence, the written contracts, I guess both of you have seen cases where it's just been a handshake.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Happens a lot. And then when there's a termination that happens, there's a conflict about what should be done and who you know, the funds belong to. A lot of complexities when they don't do it right at the start.
Andrew, was there something you wanted to add about the downside of a handshake agreement?
Well, I would just say that whether or not there's a handshake or even a contract, you know, we've talked a lot about Model A and Model C, and they are very specifically laid out. But what you see out in the wild is there's really a spectrum of how these operate. And some of them I'm not always done to the letter of the law. And sponsors don't realize it. And, you know, some of them are able to get by. Obviously, we wouldn't recommend doing that if you don't know what you're doing. There's a lot of variability out there. So if you are thinking of becoming a sponsor or you are a sponsor and you're not sure, you definitely want to talk to somebody who knows what they're doing.
Gene, there is no legal definition to these, right?
There's no one legal definition. Yeah. Fiscal sponsorship isn't defined in any code or regulations. So fiscal sponsorship is just referring to these relationships that are ultimately defined by the contract. And that's why you need a written contract, because we need to know what relationship you actually have. And the biggest thing, and where everything often goes wrong, is misunderstanding that an outside legal entity other than the fiscal sponsor cannot fundraise for the project. Even though the individuals associated with it are fundraising for the project, they are only doing so as agents of the fiscal sponsor. So the fiscal sponsor ultimately has control over all of the funds it is raising. And if it's going to re-grant them out, it's going to re-grant them out under its own legal discretion and subject to what they call variance powers in accounting language, basically saying that ultimately the fiscal sponsor's board has full control over of those assets, subject to the purpose restrictions or timing restrictions that might be involved with the donations or the grant.
Okay. We're going to leave it there because I think it's appropriate to leave it on a sort of a note of caution. And this certainly can do wonders for your charitable mission and your work, but I feel like what I'm sensing from the two of you is, you know, you got to do this right. So I'm going to sort of leave it on that cautious, you know, little bit of a finger wag, that admonition tone, that you probably need some expertise. And you got to make sure you do this correctly. Is that okay, gentlemen? Anybody disagree with that? How can you? Okay.
Not at all.
Okay. So I want to thank you very much, Andrew Shulman. You'll find him at shulmanconsulting.com and at AM Shulman. And Gene Takagi, editing the very popular nonprofitlawblog.com. And he's at GTAK, GTAK. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Pleasure. Thank you again. Next week, video storytelling, and Maria Semple returns with Deep Pockets. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. I love our sponsors, Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, Pursuant.com. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. Aplos Accounting, software designed for nonprofits, nonprofitwizard.com. And WeBe Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers, WeBeeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Lieberwitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. And this very cool music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperstein.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.